Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Opening statements today in a trial involving two teenagers, texting, and suicide. Michelle Carter was 17 years old when she allegedly encouraged her friend, 18-year-old Conrad Roy, to kill himself. The central question in this case, she did it by text messages. So are those text messages the same as helping someone kill himself? WBUR's David Boeri has been following this case and joins us now. Hi there, David.
Hi, Meghna.
So first of all, what did prosecutors say in opening arguments today?
Prosecutors cannot seem to read enough of those texts to the court, Meghna. They did that again today, portraying Michelle Carter, someone who was coaxing, pushing, berating, mocking, and practically ordering her social texting partner from 30 miles away to get back in the truck where the fumes of carbon monoxide were building, which was poisoning him and caused him to step out of the truck. She told him, get back in the truck. Here's some of the texts that were presented to the court from Michelle Carter. The time is right and you're ready. Just do it, babe. Another one. When are you going to do it? She shows frustration, seemingly, in those texts. Another one. You promise? To which he says, I promise, babe. To which she says, he adds, I have to now. And then she reminds him, you can't break your promise. 40 times or more, she was suggesting that her boyfriend, her social texting partner, Conrad Roy, kill himself.
Wow. And some of those text messages even go into specific detail about how he should do it, David. I mean, what was the defense's opening argument, you know, in defense of her?
Well, the defense is arguing. This is sad. It's tragic. It's a suicide. It's not a homicide. That Michelle Carter didn't cause his death. It was caused by carbon monoxide poisoning, that he had a long track record leading up to this suicide, a number of attempts before. And, it, you know, what's fascinating is there's this, I fell into it, the prosecution calls them boyfriend-girlfriend. The defense says they're not boyfriend-girlfriend, they're social texting partners. In a way, it made them even closer because these text, Meghna, are just graphic, they're intimate, and it's all about how you kill yourself.
Mm. Now, David, just remind us, what specifically is Carter being charged with again?
Well, Carter's being charged with manslaughter.
Yeah, okay.
And so this is the heart of it, is whether or not, and some would say this is a push, the defense certainly says that, whether or not she can be held responsible for what Conrad Roy did to himself that day.
Yeah, and I just ask because I just want to be clear for people who don't know the details of the case. She is not charged at all with physically aiding him in any way, right?
Oh, but not physically aiding him. I think the prosecution would say she put him in the truck. She badgered him into doing this. She practically ordered. She gave the weight of this. And it's interesting because this has had a run-up before this trial.
Right.
There were a number of appeals because her defense attorney did not want charges brought. So it went to the Supreme Judicial Court. And there was a rule, and there was a ruling there upholding the lower judge who said there was probable cause that her, in quoting here, admonishment, pressure, and instructions caused him to get back in the truck. And that's the truck that had those carbon monoxide fumes from a machine that was going on inside, and he got back in and he died.
Right. So you're quoting Justice Robert Cordry from the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court there. I mean, so it's interesting. Even to have this case, the SJC had to rule about whether or not there was enough evidence or reason to do so.
The judge.
Yeah.
They
okay.
The judge in who ruled that there would be a trial, he denied the defense motion. And they did that by saying that the judge had probable cause.
Yeah.
They found probable cause. So this is what's... And it's gone back and forth, this whole idea, if somebody can be held responsible for those texts. And, of course, this is a bench trial. there is not a jury trial here. It's a bench trial. And one reason why the defense will often go to a bench trial is because they have a defendant who is so unattractive and unappealing. Here you have a pretty girl who is written some very ugly text.
Mm. David, stand by here for just a second. That's WBUR senior reporter David Boeri. I want to bring in Judge Nancy Gertner. She's WBUR's legal analyst and a retired federal judge. She's also a current professor at Harvard Law School. Judge Gertner, good to see you.
Nice to be here.
So respond to what David's saying about what we heard in court today. I mean, what does the law say? Does a person have to physically take action in order to be charged?
The problem is you're dealing with a statute which is an old common law statute, so it's an old statute. So all it says is that essentially someone who doesn't intend to kill, but winds up acting with wanton and reckless disregard of the consequences, winds up with involuntary manslaughter. So you're using sort of language from, 200 years ago and trying to pour content into it.
Right. I mean, because to my mind, when I hear that statute, it brings to mind, involuntary vehicular manslaughter, for example, like with a car. But here we're talking about words.
Right. And there's no question that this is an unusual case. The previous cases in this Commonwealth were, for example, the Russian roulette case. Everybody is participating in Russian roulette. One person dies, the other two are charged. Or the husband who gave his wife, the wife said she wants to commit suicide, he gives her the gun. Usually there are acts involved, and the court had to say in this case that these are words that are at such proximity to his act as to comprise involuntary manslaughter. It's not unusual that words are used either to show that you aided and abetted something, or words are used to show that you encouraged. The critical thing here will be causation. In other words, proving the relationship between her words and his acts when there were multiple efforts to try to commit suicide in the past.
David, jump in.
No, that's right. It's all about cause. Did she cause him to do this? Now, the extraordinary thing is that she's 30 miles away and texting. She did not see him for over a year. She's only actually physically seen him two or three times since 2012, when their families were vacationing in Florida and they met. So it's all about cause in these messages. He had a long history, that she has also a troubled history. And so they're talking about ways to kill yourself. But she's also talking to him about joining her at McLean's Hospital, the psychiatric hospital, that he can get help. And the defense is showing that, in fact, she wasn't there, didn't put him in the car, didn't push him to do this, that he did it himself. They also have one text in which he says, "We should be like Romeo and Juliet at the end." Mm. You know how that you know what happened at the end? He texts, and she says, "Oh, yeah, expletive, no, we're not dying." So the defense is actually, it seems to be strong. It's made some strong points. They're bringing in a doctor who's going to be arguing that the antidepressants that she was taking caused her to be inebriated for a long periods of time, namely days.
Right.
And bearing in mind, this is going to be a beyond a reasonable doubt. A judge is going to have to make a determination of cause beyond a reasonable doubt here, which...
Judge Nancy, excuse me. I beg your pardon, Your Honor. It strikes me Robert Cordy, in his SJC decision upholding the judge, says that there was probable cause to show, and here I'm quoting, coercive quality of the defendant's verbal conduct overwhelmed whatever willpower the 18-year-old victim had to cope with depression. Those are strong words,
yeah.
Your Honor.
Right. But what he's saying, I mean, he's doing it in the context of a very unusual motion, which is a motion to dismiss charges that a grand jury had promulgated. So he's saying there's enough evidence that the government could show X, but that doesn't mean that X is what a judge will show when the other side is brought out. I agree with you. And in addition, at this point in the stage in the proceeding, he's taking the evidence in one sense most favorable to the government. That's what he has to do to be a screen, a gatekeeper. The judge is doing that to be a gatekeeper at this stage of the proceeding. So it is strong words, but it is one inference from the facts, and arguably there are other inferences. He's saying there's enough here to proceed.
Well, David, I'm just going to jump in here because you are on the phone with us because you're driving back to the WBR studios from court today, and I want to let you get back here so you can file your story for this evening and this afternoon. So David Bowery, WBR senior reporter, thank you so much, David.
You're welcome.
Judge Gertner, let me turn back to you because I got a couple more questions about this case before we move to other legal matters of the day. I mean, there was a defense appeal brief where Carter's attorney wrote that charging her with manslaughter was a transparent effort calculated to circumvent the fact that the legislature has not criminalized words that encourage suicide. I mean, that gets back to the question of the statute, but what's your response to that?
Well, it is true that in other states, there are statutes dealing with assisting suicide, expressly dealing with circumstances where someone either affirmatively assists suicide, like the guy giving his wife a gun, or fails to prevent under circumstances when you know a suicide will take place. But that's not a persuasive argument when you say if what you've done is covered by an old common law statute, but it's covered by that, the fact that the legislature didn't update it is really not a defense.
Well, I guess what I'm drawn is to this phrase that the legislature has not criminalized words. I mean, perhaps this is just too pedestrian of an interpretation, but can't the defense also just say, like, she has freedom to say virtually whatever she wants over text? The crime?
But it's an illusion to say we haven't criminalized words, right? I mean, if I threaten you.
These specific words.
Right. If I threaten you and I say, you know, you're not going to see your kids again, or I say I'm going to, you know, do something to you, those are threats that produce a result. And so arguably, you're not criminalizing the words per se. You're criminalizing the impact that the words had on the victim in this case. That's it. And that gets back to causation. How did the words play out given their relationship, given their ages? She's 17, he's 18.
At the time, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Given their ages, there's a whole other discussion about what texting does to language. In other words, whether or not people say things in that medium that they otherwise wouldn't say, and whether or not the recipient of the information knows that there's that kind of hyperbole going on.
I mean, so as David pointed out, this is a bench trial. There's no jury here.
Right.
So it's a judge that's going to be making the decision. I mean, what would be the questions in your mind? How would you get to the bottom of this?
Well, I'd want to know something about the young man, about how many times he tried to commit suicide. What were the circumstances? Apparently, he had tried once before. I'd want to understand something. Apparently, he was also taking some medication that made him more suicidal, that it was correlated with suicidal ideation. I'd want to understand their relationship. And since it does require wanton disregard of the consequences, the question is whether this 17-year-old girl fully appreciated what she was doing. Now, in addition, the Cordy decision talks about her deleting text messages and things that suggested she had some understanding of what it was that she was doing. But it's a complicated case.
Yeah, I mean, one wonders because of the frequency of the texts and the interactions, the specificity of the things that were written in those text messages. I mean, we'll have to see how this case proceeds.
It's a difficult decision, and the judge is going to have a hard time making it.